Hello, folks. It's Chris Daly. I'm here to have a conversation with another important Jamaican making a positive difference. It's indeed my privilege to have Dr. Bertram L. Melbourne, Professor of Biblical Language and Literature and former Interim Dean of Howard University School of Divinity, to be with us this morning. Dr. Melbourne is a highly accomplished, energetic, and visionary religious scholar. He has served in a position as chief executive and administrator, and he has lots of international experience and a proven track record of enhancing and launching innovative and highly impactful educational programs in environments where key leadership role is required. He has expertise in recruiting and developing top talent and improving employee morale and productivity as he goes about identifying concern and providing inspirational support for colleagues and constituencies that we can enhance the human capital that we have. He said he's a teacher at heart, and he has a teaching motto: I believe in leading by example. He's teaching us a philosophy which he incorporates in its teaching style. It's a student center, and it's relevant to the student need. It produces thinkers that are able to easily transfer learning and to be better equipped to function and contribute as ethical leaders in society. It is balanced, treating both the cognitive, motor, affective, and the spiritual levels of adult learning. It's Christ-centered for the ultimate aim of theological education. It's success-centered, highlighting success and not failure, thus enabling each student to appreciate and experience and build upon meaningful foundation of accomplishment. It's information literate, so students are steeped in information, essential to the productive society, the knowledge economy we find itself in, and it's life-oriented, not book-oriented, as it equips students for resourceful and meaningful living. Welcome, Dr. Melbourne.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's good to be with you.
It's great to have you. Let's start in by talking a little about your Jamaican roots. Tell us where you hail from in Jamaica.
I hail from the hills of St. James.
Okay.
A section called John's Hall that is about 7 miles outside of Montego Bay, and in the hilly section of that region, a little district called Worcester.
Okay.
So I received my early education in that region. I think my first teacher was in the region of between her 75th and 80th birthday. And
okay.
She did an astounding job.
Wow, and we're thankful for that.
I am too. When by the time I got to primary school, I actually, on that foundation, finished primary school in 2.5 years and went to high school.
Oh, wow. 2.5 year of primary school.
That's right.
Incredible. That's preparation. So you went on to high school, and you did your high school in Jamaica or here?
Yeah, I did my high school in Jamaica. I did my, I went to Cornwall College. I got half of a scholarship from the Jamaican government to go to Cornwall College.
Okay.
And I spent 3 years there. Then I went to Harrison Memorial High School, a Seventh-day Adventist-run institution in Montego Bay, because my mother wanted me to have Christian education. So she took me from my track that was taking me on to medicine at Cornwall, got me to Harrison, where I guess I got onto the track that the Lord had in mind for me.
Okay, neat. So from then, you migrated to the U.S. You now reside here in the U.S. in Maryland.
Not yet. You know,
not
after
yet.
Finishing high school, I went on to West Indies College, now Northern Caribbean University, where I did 2 years of arts and sciences in preparation to going on to do my pre-med.
So you're still on the medical track at that time.
Still was on. I actually got accepted at Atlantic Union College back in 1966. to pursue the pre-med. However, since I wanted to become a medical missionary doctor, I decided to do the theological part of that education in Jamaica, where it was cheaper.
Okay.
When I graduated in 1968, the leaders of the church in West Jamaica asked me to give them 2 years before going on to med school because I was so young.
Okay.
10 years later, I discovered I was not in med school, but actually in ministry and enjoying it.
Wonderful. Wow.
By then, I'd completed a master's in religion at Andrews University, and I'd gone back and was at pastored. I was youth and education director for the conference. And at that stage, I got a call to go back to my alma mater, another West Indies College, to teach.
Okay. And
I spent four years teaching.
At West Indies College, okay.
At West Indies College, yeah. Then I returned to the U.S., went to Michigan, to Andrews University, where I completed my PhD.
So you did your PhD at Andrews?
At Andrews.
In a divinity degree?
It's a PhD in religion.
A PhD in religion.
Majoring in New Testament studies and
okay.
a minor in Old Testament.
So your career path and educational process here has been one that's been guided and it's been varied. What we do have in our audience, high school and college kids, what can you say about the plans that you make and the openness you have to lead in?
I think one can choose career paths based on their inclinations, based on their aptitude, but one also has to be open to the leading and guidance of God in their lives.
Okay.
For me, as a child, my play consisted of either baptizing others or being the doctor.
Okay.
And so even though I had the inclination towards ministry then, I preferred medicine. Part of the reason was that I did not like what I was seeing in some ministers, and I didn't want to identify with that.
Okay.
But my aptitude was towards medicine, and I still see signs that had I become a physician, I would have been a good physician, but that's not the path that God had opened for my life, so I followed this path. And it has been an amazing journey. No regrets.
Yeah, you said something that's interesting. You said you didn't like the way some of the ministers were practicing. Is what that led you to become to take on the role of a teacher?
Eventually, after I had spent some time as a local pastor and I'd gotten into a departmental work,
right.
And I discovered how difficult it was at that time to change the minds of ministers and their attitude toward the young and some of their attitudes generally, I decided the better thing to do was to help mold the minds before they became formed.
Okay.
So when I got the call to teach, this was the thinking that led me to accept it.
Okay. So when did you discover that you were being like, did you have like a Samuel-like moment in your life or a Apostle Paul-like moment? How did you discern that this is the direction you should go in?
No, I didn't have anything like the Apostle Paul had. Perhaps mine was like Samuel.
Okay.
What happened was, and this is rather interesting, after I was born, my mother, who had wanted a girl, discovered I was a boy, decided to give me to the Lord. And
okay.
began praying that I would enter ministry. But she never told me.
Okay.
She just kept on praying. And even when she knew and heard me articulate my desire to become a doctor, a medical missionary, she never influenced me. She just continued praying. The only time I knew her desire was when I graduated with a bachelor's degree in theology. She gave me a hymnal and Bible set and told me. And at that stage, I was, just giving the brethren 2 years before going on to med school.
Wonderful. That's incredible.
Yeah, so these days I jokingly say that I entered the ministry through the back door. But I have to decide that this is what the Lord had in mind for me.
You're also a prolific author, and that's part of your thought leadership. How did you develop this gift?
Well, while in college, one of my mentors, my teachers, Dr. K.G. Vaz, used to reference the fact that as peoples of the Caribbean, as Jamaicans, as Seventh-day Adventist Christians, we were not writing as much as we should. Okay. And I tucked that away in the back of my head. And as soon as I got the opportunity, I began. And so, yes, there are books out there. There are also articles and in journals and magazines. I have also written for a newspaper.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I've read some of your stuff, and it's worth the read, folks, and we'll put some link onto Dr. Melbourne's writing that you can also have experience with it. One of his latest initiative, and he's one of the drivers in the confound behind a concept called College Educator Sons, CEOS. In this day of equality, that seems a little like a throwback. Tell us why we need such a program.
Well, I'll tell you the genesis, and then I'll get to that.
Okay.
I'm a part of an organization where they're trying to develop transformational leaders. And one of the definition of a transformational leader is one who, as a result of whose leadership, something is in place that would not otherwise have been in place.
Okay.
And so I was challenged in November of last year that by this November I should begin a practicum that would actually result in this kind of initiative where something would be in place that otherwise would not have been there. Oh. I was assigned a coach to help me.
Okay.
And I came up with my first idea and shared it with my coach, and she said, oh, Bertram, that's great, that's good, but keep on dreaming.
Okay.
And she said some words I'll never forget. She said, when we started the Hunger Project, it was just a small group of us, but we had a vision, and look at where world hunger is today and what has been accomplished.
Hmm.
And instantly, I got the drift of what she was asking me to do. So as I began thinking as to what I could do, the first thing that came to mind was being able to make a contribution where the declining enrollment of males in college was concerned. I was aware of the stats that in some colleges and universities in this country, the male enrollment is as low as 22%.
Wow.
In some colleges around the world, in some countries around the world, actually, the male population in college can be anywhere between 20 and 25%. So as I began looking at those figures, wanting to make a difference where they are concerned, popped into my head. And as I began to explore it, I found figures that were even more astounding. In 1949, the male population in college in this country was 70%.
Wow.
By 2006, that figure had plummeted to 42%.
So tell us, some people hear these numbers, but they may not fully appreciate the social and economic implications of this kind of decline. Can you speak to that?
Well, what I could say that if we take it, and by the way, these figures that I'm quoting and the decline in population in college is not only among minorities, as some are wont to suspect. It is across cultures. It is across racial divides. It is across socioeconomic stratas. It's in the inner city. It's in the richest suburbs. It's everywhere.
Okay.
There's an apathy and a disinterest in college now. This could have significant effect on the future where leadership is concerned. Socially, I had been, in my counseling, ladies have been telling me, and only now have I been able to tap into the real reasons, about the fact that they would find a young man they'd begin to date. And as soon as the young man would say, "What do you do?" and they would give a business card or something like that, that would be the last time they would see them.
Wow.
So the ladies are achieving academically. The young men are not. There's an incompatibility issue. And even if a young lady would be willing to go with someone like that, the men themselves are not willing to enter that kind of a relationship. So just looking at it from that social perspective demonstrates the need. When it comes to looking at who will mentor and model the males of future generation, this becomes huge and large. I've heard boys say they would like to have male teachers. They are tired of all the female teachers.
Okay.
This is another area, males to be able to teach and to influence boys. Because that male bonding is also important for males, and especially in some instances where there's no father figure.
Okay. So is there a stereotype of male going into the teaching profession that we have a decline there?
Well, you see, if there's a general decline in the number of males entering college,
okay,
then there will be a decline in the number of males entering the various professions, whether it be teaching, whether it be doctors, whether it be businessmen or whatever, there will be a consequent effect.
Well, I'm glad you've seen that, you got that vision. It's crystallized. But there's some other founders in this College Educator Sons.
Well, actually, what happened was once the idea gelled and formulated, I decided I couldn't do it alone.
Okay.
I needed to work with a board. So I sat down and put together a group that I wanted to ask to work with me as the planners.
Right.
I decided to pick out about three or four of them and invite them to a meeting with me. And my design that morning was to ask them to be the group that would work on the fundraising bit of it.
Okay.
So that we would have the resources to do what we needed to do. We got together that morning, and I was amazed to see how they were enrolled. I was able to share the vision. They caught the vision.
Right.
And by the time we got to the end of the meeting, they said, look, we are not going to work on fundraising now. We don't need that. We will work with you in getting this thing off the ground. And we began to meet as a group every 2 weeks or so, beginning in August, and we came up with these the plans that culminated in the International Day of Hope and Prayer that we had a few weeks ago.
Wow, so in less than 3 months, you're able to put together a program and get it launched.
Yeah, we got it launched. And
wow.
As a matter of fact, at this particular point in time, we have some representation in every state in the U.S. And
wow.
I am aware of 22 countries around the world. It might be more, based on how the information has been going and as one person share it with another.
Hmm.
I've not been able to keep up with.
So, and the internet has been a part of the distribution of the information?
Correct. The internet has been a part of that distribution process. We are on the web in at least two places. Those who are on Facebook, if they go on Facebook and type in College Educator Sons, we will pop up. Or we have a website, www.ceoscpr.com. www.ceoscpr.org.
.org. All right. Thank you. Folks, we need to go out and check that out. Tell us a little about the principles that undergirds this program.
Well, for me as and for us as a group, as we look at it, there are some principles that we'd like to see that we operate. You know, the value of education generally, the value of college education especially, the need for all our children, boys and girls, to value education. And we are focusing at this point on boys in order to get parity.
Okay.
Other issues would include truth, integrity, excellence, honesty, performance, trust, trustworthiness, and an important word, transformation. We believe that prayer has some role here, nurture, diversity,
okay,
service, quality. These are some of the principles by which we are operating, the things we value, actually.
Right, so you formed this set of core principles that can afford for success for young men.
Right.
But for it to be practiced, you're looking for organizations there to take these and run with them.
What we would like to be able to do, and on two fronts. On the first front, we would like men to determine that they would find at least one boy. We'd like 10, but at least one boy or young man that they would just say, maybe every other week or every month, do well in school that you can make it to college. Do well in school that you can make it to college. So an encouraging, mentoring type of relationship, which can be done in a church group, in a youth club setting, which can be done in a school setting, or just one-on-one, where individuals can set up groups in these institutions, that would be great. But yes, to mentor boys to set their gaze on graduating from college, not just attending college, but graduating. On the second front, we want this to be a holistic project. So we are seeking women and children to pray for the boys and young men who are being mentored, and to pray for the men who are mentoring them. And the fact that we're saying men to mentor and ladies to pray does not mean that we're being sexist.
Right.
The idea is that there are some boys that need that male bonding, that male relationship in life, that they need this kind of mentoring. If there are women who would like to mentor, we would never say no.
Okay.
But we would like them in the structure to have some prayer going on, because we believe prayer changes things. I agree with Alfred Tennyson. Pray when he had aught to say to Sir Bedivere, pray for my soul, more things are wrought by prayer than this world dreams of.
Wonderful. So if I'm a male, I could go to this website, get what the principle, and get started. If I'm an institutional leader,
you could
look to get groups of men together, along with folks who are willing to provide prayer coverage and the like to get going.
Right. And you don't even have to meet with the young man or the boy in a one-on-one basis. You don't even have to do that. If you would send that young man an email once a week or once every 2 weeks saying, I'm praying for you that you will do well in school, that you can enter college, and just keep that goal of college before him, just through an email, through a love note, or through a card, that's as easy as it can be.
Okay. So how does your organization stay in touch with those who may be participating in with this program?
We intend to set up, we haven't got there yet, but we intend to set up a reporting structure whereby they can report back to us. There will even be a section on the web page where this kind of reporting will be done.
Wonderful. So folks can come leave their stories of success, and if they have challenges, they can get some inspiration and guidance on how to best resolve and keep going.
That's correct. And actually, already there is a section on the website which says contact us. And there is an email address there where they can, you know, send emails to us or report to us. And there's even a telephone number where they can call and leave messages.
Could you repeat that website address again? That's for folks who might not have gotten it earlier.
CEOSCPR.org.
Wonderful. Is there another milestone that's coming? The launch is taking place and men are coming aboard and support, and these prayer groups are starting. What should we look for next?
We are planning to have our second annual Weekend of Hope and Inspiration for boys and young men. That will be the last weekend in August 2010.
Okay. Last weekend in August of 2010, we all have a convocation to take stock of what's happening over the past year.
Right, and to renew. So that would be August 27 through 30, 2010.
Okay.
And, you know, we are multi-denominational, interfaith.
Okay.
And so we have set up that Fridays we can have our day of prayer for Muslims can have theirs.
Okay.
On Saturdays, Sabbatarians can have their time to pray. On Sunday, those who worship on Sunday. And on a Monday, for those schools that would allow prayer to take place. And the idea is that we are not trying to force any lines or to go where you know, we cannot go. There's even an affirmation that can be done in a public school setting that is not really a prayer. It's a poem.
So it's a non-sectarian element to it that folks
Precisely.
Can feel comfortable with.
Right. As a matter of fact, there is even one of the affirmations that can be said by someone who is even irreligious.
Okay.
We have made provisions for everyone because we realize that this is a matter that affects everybody.
That's wonderful. So Dr. Melbourne, we thank you that for your vision, and not just for your vision, but for, you've put behind it some elbow grease to be able to put in place and launch this wonderful program. We'll be checking with you and see how this great program will be changing lives in the near future. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was my pleasure being with you.